Okay, so we're back. We're rebranding. Deepak Chopra's robbed our podcast name, so we're having to change our name. The new name is Becoming Sovereign with myself, Alex Hickman. Today we've got Silas Lees, who I wanted to be able to call one of my best friends. He's an author, two books, businessman, numerous different businesses. Let's talk a little bit about this virus, mate, because it seems that it's in the front of everybody's minds at the moment, so we may as well kick off with that.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Well, thank you, mate. I think, there's no doubt about it. There's this mass hysteria that's going around the planet at the moment around coronavirus, and people are literally losing their minds because they're being fed a complete diet of fear and panic and misinformation by the media. And I think it's absolutely tragic watching people literally running to the supermarkets, filling their trolleys full of, you know, crap food and lots of toilet paper, and leaving nothing for most other people, which I think is an absolute tragedy. But I also think, you know, it's bringing out both sides of society. So we've got people that are doing good. I think we've got there's people that are literally hoarding everything that they possibly can and acting in very selfish ways. So I think it's bringing out certainly both sides of humanity at the moment.
Yeah, I think we've got to be a bit empathetic towards people's levels of awareness with it all, because they seem to be operating, a lot of people, and I don't want this to be trying to be condescending or anything, but they operate from the level of awareness of where they're at in their life. And, you know, these people very often just get their information from media sources that they have no objective to keep people calm or anything like that. Their sole objective is to absolutely drive fear into us, get us into our animalistic state, which is manifesting itself in what we're seeing today. I think we've got to be careful of trying to be compassionate towards that, because it's easy to just tell people that they're wrong in it, and you know, but maybe being the example of it actually attracts people towards it rather than just saying you're wrong, listen to this, listen to that.
Yeah, it is a difficult one, because some of the views that I'm seeing aired through social media particularly are really quite confrontational. So I'll give you a classic example. Somebody posted the other day, now that we have this moment of quiet, can we all appreciate that the anti-vaxxers have caused this? you know, it's one of these things where the, shall we say, the most uneducated views are coming out, and then a lot of people are jumping on this bandwagon without doing their own research. So I agree that there's a level of empathy, particularly people that are in the truth movement that have been studying a lot of this stuff for a little while. We all know on a, shall we say, a subconscious level that something isn't right about this current pandemic. We know that. and this is where I think we need to be, as you say, there is a level of empathy, but I think that also shouldn't get in the way of telling people the truth. And the truth, I think you use this phrase, don't you? The truth doesn't need any protection. Let the truth stand as it is.
Yeah. You don't need to protect it. Just let it float around. It stands on its own. Yeah,
it does. Absolutely. And this is the challenge, is that when people are rooted in this mindset of fear, and then they're throwing out these views like the anti-vaxxers have caused all of this, or, you know, some other kind of variation of that, or, you know, we all need to be locked in our own homes. Let's get the army on the street. Let's put everybody in a box. Social distancing. Let's cut off all the humanity and all the connection. You know, you and I both watched the David Icke London Real interview, which I thought was absolutely excellent. And whilst I'm not advocating, you know, really this whole social distancing being applied to one particular area of society, if it is a case that the elderly people seem to be dying, because they've already got existing health complications, which is a lot of what the data is coming out to say at the moment, is that all the people that have died had at least one existing health complication, right? And most of them had two or three existing health complications. And this was the final burden that broke the camel's back, as it were. So I think when people start to look beyond the hysteria, and when they start to look at the aspects of what's behind these numbers, I think people will start to form a more rational view. And certainly when I see people begging for their own execution, i.e. please give me an untested vaccine right now. I don't care about the consequences. Vaccines are safe and effective when it's never been proven that they're safe and effective in over 30 years. You know, that sort of thing is a problem. And then when I see people demanding that the army's on the street, in, you know, to put everybody in complete lockdown so that we can't go out of our own homes, again, what kind of a society do we want to live in?
Yeah. I mean, when I was scrolling down my social media wall this morning and I saw people literally begging to be locked into their own house.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking this could end real, real bad here. Absolutely. Because the ultimate trickery is getting the people who are being suppressed begging for it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that seems to be the way that it seems to be unfolding at the moment. And I think I said earlier, I think this could all be a huge pandemic. It could wipe off millions of people, but there's just something niggling in me that just isn't accepting the narrative. There's something not right about it.
Agreed. Yeah. And,
this morning, mate, Weinstein got done.
Right.
So Weinstein's woke up this morning with the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. You've had Tom Hanks.
Yep.
Trudeau's wife, and Trudeau, I think, now, I'm not sure.
Yep.
Got these celebrities that are getting this virus. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody with the virus. I've got friends. They don't know anybody who's had the virus. Mm-hmm. I appreciate we're in a reasonably close-knit circle and we're all healthy and we look after ourselves and whatever. But surely, how are these people getting it? And anyone around here who we know hasn't even known anybody who's had it?
Yeah. Well, again, it's interesting to start to look at the numbers. You know, you've got China where all this thing allegedly started, which is, you know, had however many deaths it's had. And you've got Russia, which is practically next door with a massive population that hasn't, I think it's had one case maybe. I mean, that's without going into the finer detail of the fact that the test itself is 80% inaccurate. So, you know, we won't go into that. So all these confirmed cases or testing positive, which is another a link to the AIDS virus, of course. You know, I mean, let's look at the patents that sit behind some of these viruses across the planet. If there's a patent to it, how can you patent nature? You know, if it is a natural thing. So is it man-made or not? I don't really know. But it does seem very suspect that these people are, you know, particularly high-level people, very highly visible people, are actually starting to get this so-called disease. And I think what's going to happen as time unfolds, it's going to be very, very interesting looking at more and more high-level people that are catching this. And I think this is one of the key things that people need to be aware of, is that if we're honest with ourselves and we go inside and listen to that quiet voice, we know that something isn't right. I think we know it. And that's what, when the media is keeping people in mass hysteria, mass panic, fear all the time, people can't rationalize, people can't hear that inner voice. When you step back and take a deep breath and start to be calm and meditate a little bit on it, you know intuitively something isn't right. And that is a big thing. You know, I spoke to somebody in my local pub recently, it's a youngish girl, I made a throwaway comment and I said to her, you know, I just can't help but think there's a bit of a conspiracy sitting behind all of this. And she says, I agree. And I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. You know, from
what did she think?
She didn't give an exact answer, but she knew what the narrative of what she was being told with the narrative wasn't right. She just knew something's not right. And I think this is the thing. More and more people are starting to wake up to the fact, well, hang on a minute. How much truth is there in what we're being told? Are these numbers, are these people dying of coronavirus, first and foremost, or are they dying because they were already, you know, sick, diseased, had poor health through life choices, which I think is something that hasn't been taken into consideration at all. And this was the straw that broke the camel's back. Is it taking any more people than would ordinarily get the flu? Is it man-made? Is it not? These are the sorts of questions that people need to ask. And then I think if you look at what could be sitting behind all of this, with these very high-level people, very highly visible people getting this thing, allegedly, I start to smell a rat. I don't know about you, but I think something isn't right.
Mm.
Now, what that is obviously the subject of intense speculation. And maybe, I don't know whether you want to say a few words about that. But
well, it's what David Icke said in his interview, and I've heard him say many times over his decades of his work. He said, if you know where they're going, you can see the steps they're taking to get there. And he thinks this is one of the big leaps in order to get that police state, as you say, army on the streets, people begging for their own execution.
Mm-hmm.
1984, George Orwell, he wrote this towards the beginning of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing new. And the amount of information that we've got now, ignorance is a choice at this point, isn't it? You don't need to be ignorant to everything. I'm not saying we're right here at all, but this, all I'm saying is maybe there's more to it than BBC or CNN. What did he say about BBC again? He said
he was talking about the toilet roll issue.
Yeah.
He said you can't wipe your ass with the BBC or CNN. What was it, CNN? But if you could, you should. And I just thought that's classic. And it's exactly as he talks about, isn't it? So create the problem, get the reaction, and then provide the predestined solution to the people. And honestly, if you want my true honest views on all of this, Alex, you know, and for the audience at home, I think this is a neck and neck race now between good and evil. I think there's a whole battle going on in the background that people aren't even aware of. But we know there's been many, many, many examples now of people that have come out, very high level people, that have been caught doing some very, very, very morally questionable things. And I'm just going to leave it at that, but certainly very evil things. And I think that what sits behind all of this is a tremendous cleanup operation. So I agree it was probably already planned. 2020 is a very significant year, but I agree it was probably already planned, this coronavirus outbreak. And the consequences have, you know, we're at a crossroads. Which way does this thing go? Does it go into the root of evil, which is what's been planned for so long? Do they want us all locked in our homes? Do they want us all scared to go out and talk to one another and close down those connection points that make us human? You know, is that what they want? Everybody under 24-hour surveillance, tracked wherever you go, a cashless society where they can turn off your availability for money at any time they like if you don't behave yourself. So that system is already in operation in China, as you pointed out yesterday. You know, the social credit system, where if you don't speak the what the government narrative, you can't fly, you can't use a train. Yeah, you get your money turned off like that. So could that be happening globally? Well, we're already seeing the collapse of the stock markets, the economies worldwide, because of this. Yeah. We're all having to sit at home and everybody's in desperation. So it's inevitable at some point, I think, that these fiat currency models across the world are going to have to be replaced. And that could be the one world currency, the one world new order. Whether that happens now, or whether it happens in 2030, as has been planned for some time, who knows? The flip side of that, and I think it's important to say this from a point of giving people hope, because of man's search for meaning points out, Viktor Frankl, when he wrote that book, you know, without hope, men perish. And I think this is a very important thing, because so many people are caught up in hysteria. So many people are caught up in fear. People that have been part of the truth movement for a long time have even started to get very nervous about the fact that there's military proposed to be on the street. It could be, on the other side, a massive cleanup operation and getting rid of a lot of these, shall we say, evil people who have been doing all these very, very morally questionable things in the background, which I think every one of us who has at least some element of a conscience would actually welcome. Mm. And I think if I listen and tune into my intuition, I have no proof of this, but I do believe this is ultimately going to be for the good. I really do. And for those people that, you know, that question that, here's what I would say. It would be utterly ridiculous to think that everybody in the world at that higher level of power is evil. it's we live in a system of duality, good and evil. So there has to be a corresponding number of people who are thriving to do good. And I think, assuming this goes the way of good, well, either which way it goes, people's worlds are going to be completely shattered. But when it goes the way of good, I think when the stuff starts to come out that people have been up to, what they've been hiding, how humanity's been manipulated, how people have put trust and faith in organizations that have continually lied to them, and lied to them to the point of detrimental health to their children, to their families, their loved ones. The news media that has been lying to them continuously, I think it's going to absolutely shatter people's worlds. And that is going to be really important for us to manage from a humanity point of view. How do we help these people that have gone, you know, we call it red pilling, don't we? You know, you're on the red pill or the blue pill. You take the red pill and all of a sudden you start to see a bit more of the truth in the world. Well, imagine that journey that you and I have had over maybe 4 or 5 years happening in a heartbeat. And you find out all of what's been suppressed and hidden from you. I mean, that's going to shake up a lot of people. And I think we need to balance that very carefully rather than, you know, people turning around saying, oh, I told you so. You never listened to me. You told me I was a crazy conspiracy theorist, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you were right. We all want to be right. That's part of the ego kicking. Can we leave that ego to one side and just say, okay, well, you didn't know. I tried my best to tell you. But from a place of this, how do we all move forward together? And we will see a massive leap forward in consciousness. And there's just one more thing I want to say on that front is that, as I see it, this neck and neck race of good versus evil, each and every one of us has a part to play in how that turns out. And what do I mean by that? If we look at Hawking's scale of consciousness, I believe he gave us a massive, massive gift when he gave us that scale of consciousness. Nothing's done by accident. He delivered this gift. And if we look at the scale of consciousness from 0 to 1,000, where are we all personally vibrating on that scale? Now, most people that I'm seeing at the moment are in fear. They're in anger. They're in frustration. Yeah. Very, very, very low level emotions. And that is ultimately helping evil to win, because as we're emitting that vibration, it's feeding that energy source of evil. When we're in, I think, is it 200, 250 and above? So when we vibrate 200, so when we're at love, joy, acceptance, gratitude, knowing that this is going to work out well, taking care of our loved ones, spending the extra time with our family or our friends, our loved ones, whatever it might be, then we're feeding that energy towards good. And that's, you know, how I interpret the world.
Mm. Yes. Good answer. I think what we seem to be focusing on as well, just the physical body at the moment, and the virus, germ theory, like that's been disproven so many times. It's not even funny anymore when you say it to anybody. It's just like the guy who founded germ theory, Louis Pasteur, who created pasteurization, you know, the milk.
Oh, yeah.
He said, apparently on his deathbed, that might just be a bit of a story, but he said, basically, the guy who proved me wrong was correct. Mm-hmm. It's not the germ, it's the terrain, which is to say, it's the human body that has to be ripe for a virus. Otherwise, it can't exist in that terrain. In the same way, you can't put a whale in a desert.
Yeah,
it's an impossibility. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is why it's old people. I mean, the greatest respect nature does what it does. It kills old people because it's not feeding nature anymore. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. The analogy that I came up with is, you know, if you saw somebody who'd never seen autumn before, and all of a sudden they saw the leaves falling off the trees and they lost their mind and went, oh, my God, the leaves are falling off the trees. What's happening? You'd think, mad. And all of a sudden, you know, over a long enough timeline, 100% of us are going to die. That's 8 billion people. We're going to die at some point. It's unfortunate when our loved ones are taken from us, but we come into this world knowing that we're not going to live forever. So why is it such a problem when nature, and it is nature if it is, you know, down to a virus at the end of the day, why is it such a problem when that takes people? Because at some point,
we're going to be taken anyway, yeah.
It's already been predetermined. And people say, oh, well, it's all preventable. It's all preventable. If you got your vaccine, it would be preventable. Well, you need to look into the subject of vaccines and have a really good look, because most people don't know this, but Robert Kennedy Jr. won a court case last year in America where it was proven categorically that not a single safety study had been submitted to the authorities in over 30 years. So if there's no safety studies in place, I don't know how people can, you know, say that vaccines are safe and effective.
Mm.
That would just be a throwaway comment on that front.
Well, Bill Gates, I think it was last night or this morning, he released something that he wants to put, is it like nanotech in these vaccines? So people get vaccinated and then they can track your temperature and whatever. And if you're ill, they'll quarantine you or do whatever they want, basically.
Yeah, which sounds great, but you know, who is in control of that technology? You know, what happens when you put a foreign particle into the body?
Yeah,
the body reacts, in a lot of different ways. So it's a bit like, I would imagine, putting lots of little splinters into the bloodstream. And you know, this has been promoted in movies, a lot of using this nanotechnology, which seems like a great idea, but unfortunately, You're taking a man-made creation and forcing it into nature, and nature doesn't usually react too well to that. So I think, you know, that would do more harm than good in a lot of ways. It's very interesting to see that Bill Gates has stepped down after, you know, off the board of Microsoft. And I think the other indication that something isn't quite right is that, you know, over 1,000 of the top CEOs in the world have stepped down from their top position. And, you know, all within the last sort of 18 months, which I think is highly, highly, highly suspicious.
I mean, that could be due to them all knowing something was coming and they want to cash in. They just don't want to go down with it.
Could well be. As I say, it's a neck and neck race of good versus evil, I think. And either which way it could turn out. But, you know, they did the right thing. They took the money and they ran, or, you know, there's something more than meets the eye.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Another one. I'd like to bring up like people begging, please keep away from each other, keep us in your house, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
If the government genuinely cared, they'd take all booze, all fags, all shitty food, laced with sugar. They'd get all that out of the supermarkets and they'd fill it all with organic meats, veggies, fruits for people to nourish themselves. But no, this is meant to be a respiratory issue, a virus that affects that system in the body. Well, if that's true, why are they still selling cigarettes at the off licence then?
Agreed. There's a couple of elements to this, and it's great that you bring this up, because you've seen all these people going out to buy food and stockpile food. Well, if you look at what they're actually stockpiling, it's not exactly foods that contribute towards health and well-being in nature. So I think when this first panic buying thing started, most of the shelves were cleared out, but all the organic food was largely left untouched. Now, I know there's a cost issue sometimes with that sort of thing, but, you know, we could all do with probably losing a few pounds. We could all do with, you know, maybe, you know, trimming back maybe 20% of our food intake every day and actually replacing that with healthy natural alternatives. So that's a huge thing. But when we're all cocooned at home, what do most people have at home all day long? Well, we've got our Wi-Fi, which is on, you know, 24/7. So we're then cocooned in an environment of electromagnetic fields, which are very high intensity. So you've got people walking around with their Fitbits and with their smartwatches, a mobile phone in their pocket without any protection. They're in a Wi-Fi saturated environment. And if you live in a, you know, a terraced house or a block of flats, you've not just got your own Wi-Fi, but there's several other sources coming in. And people will laugh at that and say, oh, well, bloody hell, you know, there's no issue with Wi-Fi. It's safe. It's effective. And yet they'll take their microwave dinner and they'll put it into a microwave and it comes out piping hot. And that, you know, what caused that? It wasn't a flame that it was an unseen.
Yeah.
Why is Wi-Fi, particularly 5G, any different? How do we know that we're not being microwaved through, you know, a 5G cell phone tower, which, again, hasn't been tested for any kind of safety?
And this, I think they've rolled out in the UK, was it about 9 months ago, I think? 5G started being rolled out, Vodafone, EE.
Yeah.
And now Brighton, they had one, a big mast or whatever it was down in Brighton, I think, and they've been one of the worst hit, apparently.
Yep.
down there with this.
Yeah. And if you look at the effects from what I'm told about 5G, it causes some kind of issue of oxygen bonding to blood cells on that kind of level. So if your body's being microwaved continuously through 5G and you can't get oxygen into your blood cells, well, of course, it's going to show up as a health defect.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you. I won't even go in one of these body scanners at the airport. Well, you know, I don't. And I do think, you know, they're using microwave radiation to scan the body. You know, I personally feel I can sense that. I might be a bit crazy, who knows? But I think there's a lot more that goes on than people are realizing right now. So we have to look at all the levels of our health if we're going to, you know,
thrive. That's it. We need to look as a holistic being and not just eat well. Yeah, that's a great start, but there's a lot more to everything than just that.
Of course.
Mental, spiritual, emotional development as an individual, as a human being, not being absolutely bombarded with everybody else's stuff.
Agreed.
And this has given us a fantastic time now to actually go in. So it's sort of forced everybody in a way to like go, okay, take a step back. You can't go to work, stay in your house.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the reason for it.
No.
But I think that's it's given us a damn good excuse now to actually do something we enjoy doing as well. Like, look at the values that we have in the West. Very questionable in the way that they're like, you know, go out, good job, get yourself a load of dough behind you. By the time you're 45, 50, you'll be settled, couple of kids, blah, 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 blah. If you go to tribes and cultures across different cultures across the world and you say that to them, they'll think you're absolutely insane. So what are you giving all your life up for that illusion of nothing?
Yep.
So maybe it's given us now we've got to look at what we really value in life and what we can take forward when, because it will settle down, however it settles down. It's all up in the air at the moment, but yep. How are we going to move forward from it? Because it's a damn good time now to actually look at ourselves, face in the mirror.
I agree, mate. You know, there was something that was a shock to me when we went to that presentation that our mate Ross Wood did on health and vitality. And he presented the Paul Check totem pole that he talks about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And right at the very top of that health totem pole is nothing physical. It's all about the spirit. And the next one down is all about the mindset. And yeah. As you say, we've now got a perfect opportunity. If people are going to sit at home and just plug into Netflix for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, however long this thing goes on for, there's no growth. There's absolutely, unless you're watching, you know, good documentaries, I suppose. But the real key issue here now, I think, is to go within, is to listen to the spirit, listen to the intuition. Why are we here? What are we here to do? Is what we're being told the right thing at the moment? Is it fake news? I know Donald Trump's been pumping that one out for quite a while now, but you know, start to listen to that inner voice, that inner intuition. Start the spiritual practice. Embed those values that make us human with one another. You know, yell at your kids every 5 minutes. Try and find ways of you know, living and coexisting as a family unit. And so this is where I say it can go either way. Do we plug into Netflix and bombard social media and everybody for not being vaccinated? Or do we go down the road of increasing our spiritual awareness, becoming more of who we are at the core, and absolutely finding a way to increase the amount of love that's in the world at the moment?
Yeah, yeah. And you've got a wigwam top on?
I have.
You have. What's that then?
So Wigwam is a project I've been working on now for the last couple of years. And essentially, anybody who's – well, I don't know anybody who's really had a moving experience. So this was something that has been 20 years in the making. I probably told you, Alex, but many, many, many years ago when I first started work, I started work as an estate agent. Don't hate me for that bit, but I worked for a very old company, and the company was established in 1831. I remember the one day I was told to go up to the archive room and pull a file on a property that was sold like 40 years ago. So I went back and I went through all these files, found the folder, looked at it, and I thought, bloody hell, you know, houses aren't sold anywhere any differently to how we were doing it then in the 90s. And so I went back like 100 years and I looked forward and I thought, wow, hang on a minute. Nothing has really changed. And at that point, that was basically, this was sort of pre-Right Move. And then Right Move came along, I think, in the late 90s. And I thought, wow, somebody's going to do something to change the way properties are bought and sold, properties are transacted, to get this process moving. And unfortunately, you know, these portals have come along and they've just put everything in one place, which is great. You know, in terms of the tenant or the buyer, they've got one place to search for any home wherever they want to be in the country. But unfortunately, that's where it stopped. And my view is now, well, there's a better way to do things. You know, if you pick up your smartphone, you know, you can book a flight when the flights are reinstated. You can order a taxi. You can get a pizza. You can do pretty much anything, can organize your life through your smartphone. But when it comes to moving house, it's an incredible amount of hassle. And you've been in the property game for years, mate. You know what it's like when you're trying to, you know, buy or sell a property. It can take months and months and months to do a transaction. 40% of first-time buyers now won't actually take this step of going into the buying process because they're absolutely terrified of what can go wrong, which is huge. So what we've done with WiggyOne, we've set about to try and create a much better way of you know, moving house for everybody. We want to remove all the barriers that people face when it comes to moving home. So we've got a great new platform which is launching very soon. I don't want to oversimplify it because there's so much that's on it. But if you took something like Facebook and one of your favorite property portals and merged them together, and then threw in some CPD learning, and then threw in some sort of check a trade style, find a tradesman center there as well, then that's exactly what we've created. And our view is to do this in such a way that we're offering it to agents in a very, very, very cost-effective manner that will help all parties to move house very quickly. And we've got some very exciting tools that are built into that. We've currently got a tenant app that we're launching, which will do the ID check for the tenant, do all the paperwork, and allow them to check into properties very, very quickly. So we're very excited to be launching that to the marketplace.
Cool. I think it's a great time as well. I mean, Rightmove, I think, did they have to reduce fees? I think they've done it for 75% or something for 6 months. So what they've done?
Yeah, well, it's been interesting, and I don't want to, you know, knock the competition in any way. I don't really see them as competition. So for anybody who's read the book Blue Ocean Strategy, what you end up is you end up with a marketplace where you get two or three people doing a similar level of service, and then they all start competing on price, and it becomes a bloodbath because it's, you know, knocking each other on price and who it's a race to the bottom. Whereas a Blue Ocean Strategy is offering something completely different to the marketplace where you hold your own, which is exactly what we're doing with WiggyOne. And when this whole coronavirus outbreak thing started with people, that there was this big uproar that Rightmove, who have been the Achilles heel of a lot of agents recently, didn't do enough to support the agents and offer them a discount, because estate agents' businesses have gone through such a lot of change over the last year or so, and now all of a sudden we're being hit with this prospect, which is, you know, effectively going to force us into the next recession stroke depression.
Definitely. Yeah.
So Rightmove made an announcement which was met with an uproar from agents, and then they made a second announcement, and then Zupa have come out and said, well, we'll do you a better deal if you leave Rightmove, and blah blah blah, and very well, it's a bit like watching kids on a school playground at the moment. But there's a lot of agents that are very, very, very unhappy because the service level of Rightmove seems to have plateaued for a lot of years, if not decreased. The flip side of that is, of course, their fees are increasing on a yearly basis, and you know it costs more to be on Rightmove now than it does to employ a member of staff. And when you look at it from a different point of view, there's a guy called Christopher Watkins who's very outspoken in the estate agency marketplace, and he actually challenges agents to look at where their leads are coming from. So when they've sold a property, where did that original lead come from? And you know, it's a great KPI to track within people's businesses to understand, are you on all these different portals because you think they're the only way to find buyers? Or actually, if you did your homework, did that buyer walk into your office? Did they go to your personal website? Did a friend recommend them? Did they see a social media post? And if most people really looked at what they were spending on the portals versus what their benefit was, I think more people would move away from not just one portal, but probably all three.
Yeah, okay. It's good at looking at the context of it in other businesses as well. How you mentioned there, two or three big organizations take the market. People, that's all people see because of the budgets they've got for advertising and whatever. And if you just recontextualize, like you just said there, your own business model, I don't see any reason why you can't just infiltrate these big boys now. I think this is the sweet spot. I think we're sitting on it right now.
Thank you. Well, this is it. I mean, we're literally going hell for leather to get this thing out there to the marketplace. There's a group that I'm part of that's over 1,000 agents that are all wanting to serve notice to these big portals and get out. You know, that's a decimating impact on a business. If you look at Rightmove's share price, for example, it's falling quite significantly. And, you know, this is where we want to come to the market with a different offering. You know, we're private individuals. We're not looking to take on outside investment. I think there's this big misnomer with tech businesses is that they start up and then they seek capital as quickly as possible. And what happens the moment you do that is not only does the founder lose control of the business, the objectives of the business change. So most founders start a business with, shall we say, an ideology. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to bring to the marketplace. The moment that investment capital comes on, the vulture capitalists come in and they say, well, no, it's about the shareholder return now. And the dynamic switches completely. All of those ideologies go out the window. How do we get as much return as possible for the money that's been invested? And whilst I understand it's business and people have got a right to make those sort of choices, that's definitely something that we're not looking to do. So we don't want to bring investment capital on board if we can at all help it. We want to bring a fair offering to the marketplace, one that is exciting agents because they can be part of what we bring to the marketplace. I think the other thing that people are fed up about is they're not being heard by the portals. So they've got ideas. They think things should be done in a different way. Well, tell us. Come and tell us, guys. You know, we'd love to develop something that will really enhance your business and be a complement to your business rather than a distraction or in competition to you. So one of the things I think agents spend a lot of time doing is they agree a sale and then trying to get the sale through from the agreement date through to completion. They can spend hours and hours and hours on the phone chasing solicitors. Well, we've got a system that will actually replace all of that phone call time, real-time updates. Everybody knows what's going on in the chain. Very, very quick and easy, solved by technology. It just requires user adoption. And I think those, I will quite categorically say right now, our platform will not be for everybody. There'll be people that will be stuck in the mud. They don't want to change. They don't want to do anything different. That's fine. You stay with what you've got. Those people that are forward thinking and that are in the marketplace right now that are looking for alternatives and also are looking at it from a point of view of, you know, how do they thrive and how do they add more to the bottom line and how do they become part of the forward thinking, you know, should we say elite agents that are going to move forward? Definitely, I think we've got the solution for them.
Yeah. So where can people find you if they're interested in looking at that service?
They can go to wigiwam.co.uk and they can find out more information on there. Or you know, by all means, get in touch with me and I'll be more than happy to, share, find me on LinkedIn or find me on Facebook. I'd be more than happy to share more info.
Cool. Okay. And a lot of all this come from, obviously, you're an investor yourself, a property investor, which sort of led you down the path of money and finance and whatever. The last couple of years, you've had an interesting journey. I know I'm laughing, but the last couple of years, you've had an interesting journey about it.
Yeah.
You've understood a lot about money and how it all is, especially credit and debt and the system that we're in at the moment.
Yeah.
Obviously, you share what you want to share about that, and I'll have a conversation because you know a lot more about all this than I do. So please, let's talk a little bit about how the credit and debt system actually works.
Okay.
And the creation of money itself and why we don't actually have to worry too much about money.
Okay. Right. So this is a bit of a curveball, but I'll dive into it as much as I possibly can. First thing I'm going to say is that everything I do say right now, I can prove. So when the backlash comes, we've got the information. But essentially, there's a big lie that we're all being told about how banks lend money. Okay, that's the first thing to point out. What we're taught is that we go and put our money with a bank. Okay, we place it on account with as a deposit, and then the bank rounds up a lot of that money from other people and then lends that out to people who want a loan of some description. So that is a really important point to identify the fact that we've actually been lied to as far as that is concerned. Now, there's a guy called Professor Werner. Okay, he's a professor of economics at Southampton University. So anybody who is questioning what we're about to say, they can go and look him up and listen to him, because he's
actually... What was his name again?
Professor Werner.
Spell that.
It's W-E-R-N-E-R.
Okay, yeah.
And he is, he's actually done the world's first empirical study to find out whether or not banks actually lend money from their existing deposits, or whether or not they create it out of thin air, or are there other alternatives that we haven't been taught. So he actually went off to Germany because he couldn't find a bank in the UK that would do this with him. Surprise, surprise. So he went off to Germany and he found a small bank where he could go into them and requested a loan. And the balance sheet was small enough to find out whether or not this loan was pulled in from deposits or whether it was actually fictionally out of thin air. And the conclusion he came to overwhelmingly was that he couldn't find any record of money being reallocated from deposits to create this loan. So his ultimate conclusion was that the money was created out of thin air. Now, I do have a report, which is on the Bank of England website, that shows money creation is how the banks actually lend money. Okay, but banks don't actually lend money, which is the real paradox. So how can I?
So let's say I'm going for a mortgage on a house. I've had numerous of them. Right. And I go to Lloyds, knock on the door, say, Lloyds, I want a couple of hundred thousand pound mortgage.
Yeah.
And they do all the checks and they go, yep, no, not a problem.
Yeah.
So they then lend me the money.
Yeah.
Or seemingly lend me the money. How has that actually come about, that money? Right. Fantastic. Is it in their account or not?
Fantastic question. So this is, I'm going to do my best to explain this as simply as possible. When you go for that mortgage, and I will put that in inverted commas, you go and sign a document which is called a credit agreement of some description. Now, that document that you sign is incredibly valuable because that document basically says you agree to pay this amount of money every single month to the bank, right? So if you go for, let's say it's £100,000, 6% interest rate, you're basically saying I'll pay £500 a month to the bank every single month for the next 25 years. So that document is in essence a promise to pay. So that is a very, very valuable piece of paper. Okay. Yeah. Now that piece of paper is one of the mainstays of the banking industry. That's called, it's not called a credit agreement in banking terms. It's called a note. Okay. And that note is what is then taken into the central banks, for example, Bank of England, which isn't a public institution, as a lot of people realize. It's actually a privately owned organization. And it is then monetized. Okay. So people get the wrong idea when they think money is money. Money isn't money at all. If we look at a £20 note or a £10 note, you have to look at it even closer now since they've changed to these plastic bank notes. But under Bank of England, it actually says, I promise to pay the bearer on demand. So, you know, you go into the coffee shop to buy your cup of coffee, you hand them the £20 notes, but what you're actually handing them is an IOU. We all think we've paid for everything because we've handed them money. But we haven't. We've actually handed them fiat currency. And fiat currency intrinsically has no value. Now, if we look at what the Fed's doing over in America, the Fed has crazily said, we're going to start pumping $1 trillion a day into the economy to keep it afloat throughout this coronavirus. And the proposals are to pump more money into the banks now than they ever did throughout the 2008 banking crisis.
Insane.
Absolute insanity. Now, what does that do to the value of fiat currency? It's absolutely worthless.
Yeah.
There is no value. When you can print as much as you like You know, we're going to end up in a position where the actual pieces of paper are worth more than the actual currency itself. So people get caught up in this idea that fiat currency is money, and it absolutely isn't. Money is precious metals. Precious metals hold their value. And if you look at every fiat currency, check out Mike Maloney, on YouTube. If you look at every fiat currency for the last 5,000 years, every single one of them has failed. Every single one. And there's been more than a lot of people realize. So, you know, is the end of the dollar, the Great British Pound, the yen, all the rest of it? I absolutely think it is. I mean, the amount that is being pumped in right now is just mind-boggling.
Yeah. It seems like they're just trying to put more plasters on the balloon.
Absolutely. And this, again, comes back to what we were saying earlier about the race of good and evil. The economies of the world will change irrevocably from this point forward. But which way will they come out? You know, and I think we are probably going to see off the back of this a universal income for people.
I know
you're not a fan of it, but what do you do when everybody's business has been decimated?
Listen, I'm a fan of human liberty and human freedom. And I think if the government give people money,
mm-hmm.
obviously some people need it. I'm not saying that. I don't sound like a harsh arse here, but if people get a basic income, I don't know, $2,000 a month or whatever, $3,000 a month, whatever, you're reliant upon them. They can do whatever they want to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very dangerous game.
I agree. Is it any more reliant than... on the government than it is an employer?
No, but you're producing them. You're serving the populace.
Agreed. And this is one of the things that I, you know, without being one of these fortune tellers, I can see forthcoming in the future. I think whilst we weather this storm, there is going to be a universal income. I think over time, it'll be a bit like, you know, watching the child grow up and letting them go out into their own and fend for themselves. There will be the rise of the solopreneur. I think we're entering an uncharted territory, which will be a case that we've got a lot of technology now that we've never had before that can do the heavy lifting. If this goes the way I think it's going to go, the technology that will come out over the course of the next 10 to 20 years will blow people's minds. Absolutely blow people's minds. And therefore, when you've replaced everybody's role in their traditional sense, what do you then do? And I think that, again, becomes a great position. I'm not encouraging people to sit at home and have $2,500 a month coming in and eat Doritos and watch Netflix all day long. There's no growth in that. And you might enjoy it for a month or two. I mean, God, I'd love a couple of weeks off just to, you know, just chill out and do that sort of thing and not have to worry about any of the other concerns of building a business. But after a certain threshold, you become bored. There's no growth. The purpose of life is that it wants to grow. It wants to produce. It wants to do its own thing.
Yeah.
So if you do your, you know, coaching, for example, people are still going to have the same challenges they've got now. But if they've got a universal income, you have an opportunity to take your universal income and have more, as does everybody else. And I think that's where the transition, I think, will go over the course of the next couple of years. I'm with you 100% about personal freedom, self-sovereignty, the ability to kind of do what we want with a moral threshold behind that. And I think this is, if you look at the richest people in the world that have led from a place of goodness, like Andrew Carnegie, he was coming from a place of the responsibility of the wealthy people is to give back to those less fortunate. So I think all these people that are living in poverty at the moment, all these people that are relying on food banks at the moment, they need some support. The current system is not working. We can't argue with that. And not everybody has the ability to, pull themselves up by the bootstraps.
Yeah.
But I believe they should be given the opportunity.
I think a lot of this starts from, well, childhood to begin with and parenting and the schooling system. But I think one of the pinnacle things that we're not told is our true natures and what the power that resides within you.
Yep.
Because you can be stuck in a slum and still be a free human. You could be in a cell and still be completely centered and focused.
Yep.
You don't need to be trapped regardless of external reality.
I agree.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm being told, not told that on purpose, by the way. I don't think that's ignorance on the behalf of the elite. I think that's purposely done. You're an animal on a spinning ball. Whether we are going to go down that route, but you're an animal on a spinning ball. And that's it. You live, you die, and that's it. And I think if we actually... There's so many spiritual scientists now out there that are just completely proven that model of reality to not be correct. But it's hushed up. You've got the Rudolf Steiners and the Blavatskys and people like this who their work over the last 100 years, they died about 100 years ago, before that, was just sublime. And if we could push that work, our society would be completely different. We wouldn't need universal income because people would be already there at that point where they wouldn't need to be gifted anything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It seems to me that model with the universal income is, as an example, is people needing the help. They shouldn't need the help.
Agreed. Agreed.
But that comes from not parenting as such, but the actual education and the soul sort of gets just trampled upon.
Agreed.
As they're growing up.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we, as a society, we need to focus on is the kids. And that's why evil targets kids.
100%. I mean, a kid arrives here perfect and you know, is free and knows who they are at the core. And it's only after years and years of programming that they get beaten down and begin to believe something different. And I agree with you. I think there's going to be a huge transition. I think whether that storm and that transition, unfortunately, people are used to going to the bank account, drawing the money out, going and getting their groceries, paying the mortgage, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's something else I want to just come back to on this coronavirus. If you look at what Chase Bank have done in Canada, they've cancelled all credit card debt, okay, which I think is huge. I think there's going to be a lot more of that coming. So this whole idea of debt that we talked about earlier with the banking system, I think there's going to be a forgiveness of all of that across the board. Now, that inherently changes the game for everybody. If you no longer have to pay your mortgage, if you no longer have to pay your credit card, because if you look at it in the context of where we are, you're the one who created that money in the first place. You know, people then are in a very, very, very different place. And that's when this hard reality comes back, as you're quite rightly pointed out. What am I going to do with my life? Why am I here? What's my purpose? You know, what am I here? And everybody's on that different level of consciousness. Some people will go off and they'll, you know, teach and support people with a business challenge. Some people will teach and support people with personal challenges. Other people will probably create the next Facebook. Some people will create the next SpaceX, whatever it might be. But having that freedom of not having to succumb to the pressures that people are under right now, will fundamentally change humanity for the better.
Yeah, I think, well, God doesn't make mistakes.
He doesn't. And I don't think we're alone. That's the other question. That's the other point to make out.
No? In what sense?
I think, I do believe there's going to be a mass unveiling of the, shall we say, the other entities that are in existence across the universe.
Right. ETs.
ETs. Good and bad. Like with all things.
Same with anything. Yeah. Well, I'm open to the idea, mate. There's no reason why. I think they call it a secret space program, don't they? But I think that's fairly common knowledge now, isn't it? That they've got stuff going on out there. And
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if disclosure, that's what they call it, isn't it? Full disclosure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, there's going to be a bit of that. And that's, again, it's going to shake people up. But I think the technology that brings with us, you know, or with it, shall I say, to us will be absolutely phenomenal.
Well, it's exciting times, mate. And I'm not sure if any of us are prepared for it, to be fair. I don't think we can. I think we've just got to surrender to, not through apathy, but surrender to the will of divinity, as it were. And see where it's going to lead, because eventually evil destroys itself because it's greed and anger and whatever. It defeats itself. So I'm a big believer that human beings are innately good, which is why they don't need stuff off other people. They've got it all residing within them. And I think people just need to know that. We need to get it out there to them. And you've got a great platform now to, with your new business and whatever, to change that business model. And I think, for example, like oil, why are we still raping the earth of oil and everything?
100%. Yeah, well, this is where the new technologies will come in. I mean, it's mad if you look at your phone now, that is your MP3 player, your camera, will make and receive phone calls, video chat with somebody in Australia, and it's like, you know, real time. And yet we're still running on technology that was founded over 100 years ago through oil. I think we will see the unveiling of a lot of Nikola Tesla's work that was, you know, confiscated and stolen several years ago. I think that will come out. And that has massive implications for the planet in a very, very good way. Massive implications. And, you know, imagine not having to pay a utility bill ever again. You know, I think
I'm sure they'll tax it somehow.
well, again, it depends who wins. You know, if you're coming from a place of goodness and you knew this technology could help everybody on this planet, would you release it? You're a good guy.
I would.
Of course you would. Yeah. Anybody with a soul would do that. You know, if there's a cost involved, well, yeah, let's support the costs. You know, if there's massive profiteering involved, let's not support that. You know, I think there's I think the time for big social change. And you know, that's on all levels. I think business will change from cutthroat dog eat dog to more social enterprise, and I'm really a fan of that word, but more conscious business. Let's use that as a phrase. And you know, that can be exciting times. Who knows where that will lead?
Yeah. So where's your energy going moving forward then?
On a personal or business level, or all
just anything holistically?
Okay. So for me, over the course of the last couple of days, I've got really at peace with what's going on. So I think that's really the vessel to be in peace, be it accepting of where we are, not to get too caught up with the hysteria that's going on right now. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I'm probably going to come off social media for a couple of weeks whilst this all blows over, because the views are somewhat extreme and sometimes I just can't help getting involved, you know, but that's just me, giving people a sharp dose of truth. But anyway, I think it's really important that we practice this self-sovereignty. I mean, since you first came out with that phrase of self-sovereignty, I just thought it's absolutely bang on. It's what people need to work with. Be in charge of you, you know, be in charge. And again, David Icke highlighted this at the end of his interview on London Real, where he talks about being in your own uniqueness. And I think that's it. And that there's always that journey of personal development that comes with that, or journey of life, of growth, of contribution. That's really where I'm going to focus on my energies, is what can I give to humanity? And that doesn't necessarily mean that I have to do anything more than just, if I'm at peace with myself and I'm accepting of what's going on right now, that on a vibrational level can have a massive impact on the earth. You know, if I'm in fear and I'm running scared and I'm telling everybody how scared I am, or I'm inciting fear and anger and hatred by sharing all of this on social media, then I'm just helping to keep the collective down. As one person vibrates at a higher level on Hawkins' scale of consciousness, it drags up the rest of them, as does the complete opposite.
Yeah.
People down. So I think for me, focus my energy on where it needs to be. And ultimately, means my life is happier. You know, it is purely selfish in some respects, that I can live a happier life. I don't have to live in fear. You know, if there's army on the streets, there's army on the streets. If the army come and throw me out of my house, they throw me out of my house. You know, look at Nelson Mandela as a prime example of somebody who went through the most atrocious treatment for 27 years and then came out and changed the country, or changed the world, actually, if you want to put it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So it's very powerful being in charge of the self and the soul. What's the phrase? Master of my fate, captain of my soul.
Master of my fate, captain of my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Very nice. Let's wrap this one up then, mate. It's been over an hour, I think.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, 1 hour 10. Cool. Thanks a lot for coming on, man. We're going to ramp this back up again, and you're the first one to be ramped up. So.
It's a pleasure being ramped up.
Cheers, man. All good.
Thanks ever so much.
Cool.
See you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care.